Welcome back to The Deep Dive, the show, where we really try to give you the essential distilled insights you need to navigate the fastest changing areas of our economy. Today, we're focusing squarely on a seismic shift happening in education. It's a shift that's being driven by two, well, really powerful and relentless forces.
Yeah.
The incredible pace of digital transformation and, of course, the pervasive arrival of generative AI. And I want you, our listener, to think about this for a second. Whether you're an employer, a student, or a professional already in the workforce, just ask yourself this critical question. How do we get the skills we actually need, the high demand ones, quickly, credibly, and maybe most importantly, without committing to years and years of time and the crushing debt that comes with a traditional degree?
Right.
The 4-year academic cycle is just, it's too slow. It can't possibly keep pace with an industry where the key tools and platforms are evolving on a 4-month timeline. The whole system is just breaking under the pressure of speed.
That pressure is absolutely real. And you're right, the traditional model is really struggling to adapt. But there is a solution emerging.
Mm-hmm.
And it's emerging fast. It's something that is fundamentally changing how we approach competence and validation all over the world, and that is micro-credentials.
Micro-credential.
Exactly. And our deep dive today isn't based on, just speculation or a few articles. It is anchored in some serious academic rigor. We're looking at a massive bibliometric analysis that synthesized insights from 608 academic publications.
Wow. 608 publications, and that's spanning from, what was it?
From 1992 right up to 2025.
So over 3 decades. That's not just a trend analysis. That is literally mapping the entire evolution of an educational revolution.
It truly is. And the core mission of this extensive research, and I think our mission here today, is to give a complete assessment of the potential that micro-credentials hold, especially within this rapidly digitalized, AI-driven higher education environment. We need to understand precisely how this flexible, kind of modular approach is designed to foster effective and sustainable upskilling for the workforce. And ultimately, how it fuels the knowledge economy.
Okay, let's unpack that term right at the start because it's the centerpiece of our discussion. But I feel like the terminology can get a little murky for people. We hear things like digital badge, mini qualification, even nano degree. What specifically makes a micro-credential a micro-credential?
That's the right place to start. Fundamentally, they're often described as those mini qualifications or digital badges, but their core purpose is highly targeted. It's to certify an individual's proven competency in a very, very specific skill, or maybe a tightly defined cluster of skills.
Okay, so not broad.
Not broad at all. The key difference from traditional academic credentials, your BA, your BSc, your master's, it's all in the granularity and the really focused scope. A diploma certifies that you've completed a broad program of study. A micro-credential, or an MC, certifies that you can do something specific, something concrete.
I like that distinction. So if a traditional degree is, say, a map of a large continent, a micro-credential is more like a highly detailed topographical map of just one single mountain range. It's depth, but in a very narrow, immediately applicable area.
That's a perfect analogy. Exactly. And the most authoritative bodies are starting to cement this definition. The analysis we're looking at cites the UNESCO description, which is pretty clear. It defines a micro-credential as a record of focused learning achievement that specifically verifies what learners know or can do.
What they know or can do. That feels important.
It's critical. And crucially, this record is awarded as a badge or a certificate by a trusted provider, and it has to meet clear quality standards. That emphasis on verifying what learners know or can do really represents the central philosophical shift. We're moving away from old systems that were focused on, seat time or just memorizing facts.
Right. Input versus output.
We're moving from input validation to output validation. Exactly.
Okay. Let's make this even more concrete. Give me an example. If a traditional computer science degree transcript shows you passed a course and it's just called database management, what would the micro-credential for that look like instead?
Okay, good question. So the micro-credential would certify a specific actionable outcome. It wouldn't just say database management, no way.
Mm-hmm.
It might say something like certified in deploying and managing PostgreSQL databases in a distributed cloud environment, or maybe proficient in SQL query optimization for big data sets.
Ah, I see. The level of detail is completely different.
It's night and day. And that level of detail allows an employer to instantly assess job readiness. It completely eliminates the guesswork that comes with those vague general course titles. And that specificity is exactly why MCs are so crucial for the immediate upskilling needs we see in the knowledge economy.
So we've established what they are. Now let's get into the why. Why did they have to emerge now? This doesn't feel like just some pedagogical novelty. It feels like a direct systemic reaction to a whole confluence of global crises. What was the core problem that micro-credentials are trying to solve? Let's start with the skills gap.
The skills gap is absolutely the primary pressure point. And it's not new. It's been acknowledged for well over a decade. Even before the huge digital acceleration of the pandemic, employers all over the world were consistently reporting these serious concerns. The problem was that graduates, even though they held traditional, very expensive degrees, they consistently lacked the practical job-ready competencies that modern workplaces require.
It's the perennial complaint, isn't it? That universities are graduating people who are perfectly trained for yesterday's jobs?
Precisely. And in today's environment, that gap is accelerating at a terrifying pace. We're not talking about a lack of basic office skills anymore.
No.
We are talking about highly specialized, high-value competencies. Employers are desperate for people skilled in ethical AI development, cloud security protocols, advanced data visualization, or even specific platform engineering languages like Rust or Go.
Things that didn't even exist in a meaningful way 5 or 10 years ago.
Exactly. And the traditional university curriculum cycle, which, as you know, can often take years to approve and then implement any updates.
Yeah.
It just cannot inject these specialized skills quickly enough into the system. It's structurally incapable of keeping up.
And then, of course, the great catalyst, the COVID-19 pandemic, hits and just pours gasoline on this digital fire.
Absolutely. The pandemic forced higher education institutions and, I mean, millions of learners to adopt online platforms and new asynchronous learning models, you know, virtually overnight. Mm. It was a massive unplanned global experiment.
Right.
And this pivot, it immediately highlighted the rigidity of traditional credentialing. It exposed its total inability to flexibly recognize and validate the skills that learners were acquiring really rapidly and often independently outside the formal degree framework.
You mean through things like MOOCs or corporate training or just self-study?
All of the above. The system just struggled to recognize any learning unless it happened within the four walls of the accredited institution.
Which suddenly became impossible anyway.
Exactly. And then underpinning all of this are these massive economic factors.
Yeah.
We really can't discuss the rise of MCs without talking about the financial burden of higher education. High tuition costs and just crippling levels of student debt have severely, and I think rightfully, questioned the return on investment of the traditional four-year degree.
Especially for someone who's already in the workforce.
Yes, especially for a working professional who maybe already has a degree but needs one specific current skill to qualify for a promotion or to pivot their career.
They need a targeted skill injection, not another 4 years of general education review. They don't have time for that.
They need just-in-time learning. That's the term.
Mm.
And micro-credentials fit that economic and time-based requirement perfectly.
Mm.
They offer a measurable, valuable outcome for a tiny fraction of the time and cost.
So a surgical solution where the traditional degree offers a whole body treatment.
That's a great way to put it, yes.
And as we mentioned at the top, the arrival of widespread generative AI just accelerates this need for speed exponentially.
Well, the speed factor is absolutely crucial to the knowledge economy. We've said traditional degrees are slow to adapt. Now contrast that with micro-credentials. They can be developed, accredited by industry partners, and launched within a matter of months to meet these emerging skill requirements.
For example, prompt engineering for a specific large language model.
Prompt engineering, advanced data literacy, maintaining AI systems responsibly. All of these are perfect examples. They function as highly viable, rapid supplements to formal education. And they're essential for maintaining the relevance of human capital against a backdrop of incredibly rapid technological obsolescence.
It's compelling to see how fast the academic world itself recognized this paradigm shift. The data you analyze provides some pretty concrete evidence of this acceleration.
The growth is, frankly, astonishing. We charted the scientific publication output on micro-credentials. In 1992, there was just one single publication on the topic. Just one.
One paper in the entire world.
In the entire world. By 2024, that figure had ballooned to 165 publications in that single year alone.
Wow.
That's an exponential growth curve. It confirms that micro-credentials have moved from being some obscure educational theory to a central global focus of research, policy, and institutional strategy.
That jump from one publication to 165 annually is staggering. What does that signal about the researchers' focus? Are they just documenting the phenomenon, or are they actively trying to solve problems with this model?
Oh, they are actively solving problems. This growth signals that researchers view MCs not just as a technology, but as a critical policy intervention to solve this skills mismatch crisis. The research pivoted really quickly from just defining the concept to analyzing its implications for lifelong learning frameworks, for curriculum design, for labor market integration.
And the public interest seems to confirm that trajectory. You mentioned some Google Trends data.
Yes, the data is very clear. The public is catching up to the academic interest. Searches for terms like micro-credential, micro-degree, and digital badge. They showed two distinct, really powerful surges.
Okay, what were they?
The first, as you might expect, was during the initial 2020 pandemic period. The world went remote, and suddenly everyone was looking for online education options.
Makes sense.
But the second surge was more recent, in the second half of 2025, according to the analysis timeframe. This shows that public demand is continuing to rise. It's now being driven by professionals who are specifically seeking AI and digital upskilling options.
So this confirms that it's a sustained consumer-driven demand. It's not just some institutional policy fad that's going to fade away.
Exactly. This is here to stay.
So to sum up this first part, we're looking at a perfect storm. A systemic failure of degrees to adapt, crippling student debt, rapid digital acceleration, and the overwhelming speed of AI. That really sets the foundation for how this new concept evolved from a simple digital badge into a powerful tool for certifying competence.
Which brings us nicely into the second part. We need to trace the evolution of the micro-credential itself. Mm. Because, you know, it didn't just appear fully formed. The early literature, particularly back in the 2010s, focused very heavily on digital badges.
Right, digital badges. They were pioneered primarily to certify learning that happened outside the formal curriculum, correct? Things like achievements in non-academic settings or specialized corporate training, maybe platform-specific certifications.
Yes, exactly. They were proof of achievement, but they initially lacked that traditional credibility. They didn't have the university stamp of approval.
And that created the first big challenge, I imagine.
It did. The question was, could a digital icon, which often just proved you completed a course, could it truly hold the same weight as a diploma earned over months or even years? The public, and certainly traditionalists in academia, were very skeptical.
But then employers started to see things differently.
They did. Employers quickly began to shift. They started to value the granular skill information that these badges provided far more than the generalized academic transcript. Why? Because they knew exactly what the badge holder could actually do.
And that detail, that specificity, is what transformed the concept. The research literature began to affirm the power of MCs to demonstrate what a candidate knows and can do in a concrete, measurable way, which is, as we've said, a huge departure from the often ambiguous course titles you see on a traditional transcript.
It's transformative. It's transformative because it facilitates true competency-based education and critically robust lifelong learning. And this is where universities are now really starting to adapt their models. They're moving away from simply defending their old territory, and instead they're exploring the modular nature of MCs.
So how are they deploying these modular systems? Are there specific models that are emerging from the research?
The analysis points to two major deployment strategies being tested globally by higher education institutions, or HEIs.
Okay.
First, there's what's called the embedded model. This is where they integrate micro-credential modules within existing degree programs. So, for example, a student pursuing a traditional marketing degree might earn a specific MC in, say, advanced TikTok analytics or ethical data harvesting as part of their main degree.
Ah, okay. So this ensures the degree remains holistic, but the student walks away with immediate marketable skills that they can put on their resume right now.
That's the idea. And the second model is really aimed at the working professional who needs to upskill.
Right.
And that's the stackable model. Here, universities offer standalone credit-bearing certifications in high-demand skills, like a specific cloud architecture tool or a project management methodology like Agile. But the real long-term power lies in the fact that these standalone MCs can later stack into larger qualifications.
Stack into? What does that mean exactly?
It means you could take three or four related MCs and they might stack together to form a graduate certificate. Or they might even count toward credit in a full master's program down the line. Mm. It's like building an academic qualification, one verified competency at a time.
That stacking approach is really ingenious because it lowers the risk for the learner, doesn't it? You get the immediate professional benefit from the first MC, and if you decide to commit to a full qualification later, you haven't wasted any of that prior effort or money.
It's an incredibly powerful motivational tool. The research indicates that this system dramatically improves learner motivation. The connection between the effort, the validated skill endorsement, and your enhanced employability is immediately clear and tangible.
You get constant, smaller rewards instead of having to wait for that delayed gratification after 4 long years.
Precisely.
Now let's bring in the disruptors, because micro-credentials are not exclusively the domain of universities, and this feels like the element that could fundamentally challenge the historical, entrenched monopoly of higher education. Who else is out there issuing them?
This is maybe the most revolutionary aspect of the whole phenomenon. Mm. The massive influx of non-university actors. Non-HEI providers have become extremely active in credentialing.
You're talking about big tech companies.
Yes. Major tech firms like Google and Amazon are huge players.
Yeah.
But also specialized industry groups focused on, say, cybersecurity or sustainable manufacturing. We're also seeing high-tech startups that are defining niche skill sets. Nonprofits focused on digital inclusion, and crucially, even small and medium enterprises, SMEs, that are setting standards tailored precisely to their immediate hiring needs.
Okay, that's where the quality assurance challenge becomes very, very real. If the employers, the people who actually need the skills, are starting to issue the credentials themselves, how do we prevent the whole system from becoming a wild west of unverified claims? This challenges the very definition of academic rigor.
You've hit on the central critical barrier to global recognition and trust, because dozens of different definitions, assessment rigor levels, and administrative practices have emerged all over the globe, establishing common standards for what a micro-credential actually represents. That is the major challenge highlighted again and again across all 608 publications.
So the speed and flexibility that make them so attractive are also their greatest liability if they lack rigor. So we need universal verifiability. We need trust that can transcend borders and institutions. How does technology, and you mentioned blockchain specifically, step in to solve this standardization and trust problem?
This is where the technical explanation gets really critical. Researchers are heavily invested in using blockchain technology to secure and verify micro-credentials. A traditional certificate is just a piece of paper, or maybe a centralized digital file. It can be lost, it can be forged, it's hard to verify instantly. Blockchain fundamentally changes this dynamic.
Okay, walk us through how it changes it. For a listener who might understand the word blockchain in the context of, say, cryptocurrency, but not its functional application here.
Okay, think of it this way. When an accredited institution awards you a micro-credential, instead of just giving you a PDF or a paper certificate, they record that specific achievement, that transaction, on a distributed, shared, encrypted digital ledger. That's the blockchain. And once that record is added, it is immutable.
Meaning it can't be changed.
It cannot be altered or deleted. Ever. Because that record is held simultaneously by thousands of computers in the network. To change it, you'd have to hack all of them at once, which is practically impossible.
So forgery becomes impossible and verification becomes instant.
Precisely. Any potential employer anywhere in the world can check the authenticity of your MC instantly and cryptographically. They don't need to call the issuing university or company. They just check the public ledger.
I see.
So this use of an immutable distributed ledger ensures maximum security, immediate verifiability, and easy shareability across platforms and borders. This technological layer is absolutely essential. It's how we attempt to build global digital trust in an ecosystem that, by its very nature, is decentralized and fragmented. This robustness is what gives the MC ecosystem its potential to really challenge the established credibility of the traditional degree.
Okay, we've now established the context and the concept. Let's get to the heart of this, the data. For this deep dive, your team conducted this rigorous bibliometric analysis of 608 publications. Before we get into the findings, let's take a moment to make sure our listener understands the methodology. What exactly is bibliometric analysis, and why did you use tools like Scopus and Viewer Viewer?
Yeah, that's a great point of clarity. So bibliometric analysis isn't just, you know, reading 608 papers and taking notes. It's a quantitative statistical method that we use to analyze academic literature. We treat the publications themselves, their keywords, their citations, their authors, all of it, as data points. By analyzing the frequency and concurrence of certain terms, we can scientifically map the intellectual structure of the field, see the emerging trends, and identify the primary concerns of the entire research community.
So you're essentially creating a scientific map of what the world's researchers are thinking and talking about on this topic.
That's a perfect way to describe it. And we use the Scopus database for a specific reason. Unlike some narrower databases, Scopus provides much broader coverage, especially across the social sciences and education literature. That's crucial, since micro-credentials are as much a policy and pedagogical topic as they are a technological one.
And Veo's Viewer.
Veo's Viewer is the software that does the network analysis. It's a visualization tool that groups all these related topics, keywords, authors, institutions, into clusters. It visually shows us which concepts are tightly connected in the academic discourse.
That explanation is really helpful. Okay, so the results of this analysis reveal the immediate practical concerns of the academic world. Let's look first at the five clusters that were identified from the text data. So, from the actual words and phrases that most frequently appear together in the titles and abstracts.
These five clusters, they really reveal the primary immediate conversations that researchers are having, and they largely focus on that interface with the labor market. The clusters are, number one, employability and micro-credentials.
No surprise there.
Not at all. Number two is distance learning and flexible education. Three is learning and skills development. Four, digitalization and technology integration. And number five, quality assurance and sustainability.
Okay, so employability is obviously priority number one. That confirms that the core function of an MC, in the eyes of researchers, is job market relevance. But what stands out to me is how tightly integrated those all are. It's not five separate discussions. It feels like one interconnected system focused on speed and relevance.
That entanglement is the defining feature of the field. You're absolutely right. And the analysis confirms that lifelong learning acts as the crucial cross-cutting concept that ties all five of these areas together.
So?
Well, you see it manifest in the employability cluster, because MCs enable continuous worker upskilling. And then you see it again in the distance learning cluster, because flexible online courses are the delivery mechanism required for workers to learn throughout their entire careers.
That makes perfect sense. So the MC serves a dual function. It meets the immediate tactical market demand for a specific current skill. But by doing that, it also supports the strategic long-term personal development that professionals need to remain adaptive throughout their whole working lives.
That is the core finding of the text analysis. It shows that the most successful MC initiatives are inherently holistic. You have to leverage technology, which is cluster four, to deliver accessible online courses. Cluster two, that measurably improves skills. Cluster three, for better employment outcomes. Cluster one, all while adhering to rigorous standards, which is cluster five.
And that constant interplay is what keeps them from just becoming isolated, unverified training modules. It makes them structural components of the new knowledge economy.
Precisely.
Okay, so let's move to the second set of results. This was from the bibliographic data, the analysis of citation patterns, and keyword co-occurrences. This analysis identified six clusters. Why do the bibliographic clusters often reveal a different or maybe a broader view than the simple text clusters?
That's a really important distinction. The text clusters, they show you the immediate issues being discussed right now. It's the what's hot list. The bibliographic clusters, on the other hand, they show you the underlying structure of the field. It's about how different areas of research are built upon each other, which emerging topics are drawing shared academic interest from different disciplines. It reveals the long-term policy and pedagogical vision.
I see. So what are the six structural clusters that were identified from this data?
So the six bibliographic clusters, which really expand the scope of the research, are one, learner motivation and benefits, two, alternative credentialing, which includes digital badges and MOOCs, three, lifelong learning and continuing education. Four is AI-enhanced learning. Five, teacher professional development. And number six, equity and inclusion in education.
Looking at these, I see a really clear shift toward more future-focused, complex policy challenges, especially clusters four, five, and six. AI-enhanced learning, cluster four, just jumps out immediately as the key technological trend that's driving future research.
Absolutely. While the text clusters mention digitalization in a general sense, the bibliographic clusters get specific. They focus on how that technology is actually being applied. AI-enhanced learning is a huge emerging area of research that asks how we can use AI not just as curriculum content, but as a tool to improve the delivery and the assessment of the MC itself.
Can you give us some specific examples of that? How do researchers envision AI enhancing the learning process inside an MC platform?
Certainly. One of the biggest applications is personalized learning dashboards. An AI can analyze a learner's background data and their performance within the micro-credential, and it can instantly identify knowledge gaps. Then it can adjust the sequence of learning modules or even the assessment method specifically for that one individual.
So it's more efficient and engaging.
Way more efficient. And another huge one is AI for automated competency-based assessment. This allows massive courses to objectively grade really complex practical tasks, things like coding projects or data analysis reports, which traditional systems just struggle to handle at scale.
And that connects directly back to the first cluster, learner motivation. If the learning path is personalized for you and the feedback is instant and accurate, your engagement is going to go way up.
Exactly. And then the focus shifts to the facilitators of education, the educators themselves, with teacher professional development. Cluster 5. This confirms that MCs aren't just seen as a tool for students. They're a vital mechanism for making sure that faculty and academic staff can keep their own pedagogical and technological skills current.
Right. If a university is going to build a new MC in cloud security, they first have to ensure their own faculty are certified in cloud security and know the latest teaching methods for it.
Exactly. It creates this closed loop of continuous improvement.
Yeah.
And then finally, equity and inclusion, Cluster 6. This highlights the critical societal responsibility. The research is actively exploring how to ensure that these digital credentials don't just deepen the divide between the digital literate and the excluded, but that they can actively serve as a bridge.
How could micro-credentials, just by their design, promote greater inclusion than traditional education? What are the mechanisms?
Well, they can overcome several historical barriers. First, cost and time. They're just more accessible financially and require less long-term commitment. Second, geographic barriers. They're often delivered fully online, which allows people in remote areas or developing economies to get access to world-class certifications from organizations they could never physically attend.
So the potential is there.
The potential is massive. The research emphasizes that if policymakers focus on providing internet access and maybe subsidized tuition for disadvantaged groups, MCs can become incredibly powerful instruments of social mobility.
This analysis gives us a much richer understanding than just listing off a few topics. It really confirms that researchers and policymakers view micro-credentials as, well, as all these things at once. Their technological innovations, their pedagogical tools, their workforce development mechanisms, and their powerful instruments of social policy, all working together toward the goal of a sustainably skilled global workforce.
And that really brings us to the ultimate question. Having established the landscape and the core drivers, what are the practical, strategic actions that stakeholders need to take to ensure micro-credentials actually fulfill this promise of sustainable upskilling?
Okay, so the prominence of employability and motivation in the data proves that MCs are valued primarily for improving job prospects. So let's start there. With the institutional and political recognition needed to bridge that gap between academia and the workforce.
The first step is, it's just undeniable. Policymakers and higher education institutions have to formally recognize MCs as a core strategic mechanism to bridge the gap. This isn't a side project anymore. It means moving MCs out of the experimental continuing ed category and into the mainstream degree structure.
And that recognition demands a completely different kind of collaboration, right? If a traditional institution just tries to do this in a silo, the MC will fail because it won't be relevant.
It will be obsolete before it's even launched. Absolutely. This requires significantly closer, more formalized collaboration with industry partners. And I don't mean just asking for advice. I mean co-designing the curriculum and co-validating the outcomes. The goal is to ensure the content of micro-credential programs directly addresses current, precise skill gaps and competency priorities that are defined by the employers themselves.
So industry has to have skin in the game.
Yes.
When this is implemented well, where industry certifies the relevance and academia certifies the rigor, what's the net benefit to the labor force as a whole?
The net benefit is a massive enhancement of what economists call human capital. It enables continuous, highly targeted upskilling, and that ensures the labor force remains inherently adaptable to rapid technological change. This adaptability, this resilience, it's the literal definition of sustainable success in the knowledge economy.
So without this pathway,
without MCs providing this rapid, validated reskilling pathway, large segments of the population risk technological unemployment every single time a major shift like AI occurs.
Let's circle back to the technology mandate, because the analysis was crystal clear on this. Technology isn't just an enabler, it's fundamental to MC success, particularly when it comes to security and verification.
It is the bedrock of the whole system. Institutions have to commit serious investment to robust digital infrastructure for issuing, managing, and tracking these credentials. And we have to return to the mandatory adoption of blockchain-based credentialing systems. These systems are not just a nice feature to have. They are essential for achieving the necessary security and, crucially, the global verifiability of qualifications that can actually compete with the weight and history of a traditional degree.
Let's elaborate on that global aspect. Why is blockchain so vital for international recognition?
Okay, imagine a learner earns an MC in software development from some obscure but really high-quality non-HEI provider in one country. Then they try to use it for a job in a completely different country. The hiring manager there needs instant, guaranteed proof of its authenticity.
Right, they can't just take their word for it.
Exactly. Blockchain provides that through its distributed, immutable record. This technological harmonization, making sure that the digital credential can be trusted across different regulatory and educational jurisdictions, is what allows for a truly mobile global workforce, which is a necessity for the knowledge economy.
And as we noted in the cluster analysis, AI is the technology that's driving the need for all these new skills, but it's also the tool for teaching them.
Precisely. AI integration is just non-negotiable for scaling quality learning. It's crucial for personalizing those learning pathways and providing intelligent support inside the MC courses. We need to move beyond simple adaptive quizzes. We have to be using AI-driven systems that actively tailor the micro-credential content, adapting the complexity, shifting the focus, recommending remedial material, all based on the individual learner's specific needs and pace.
And that individualized approach directly combats the high attrition rates we often see in massive open online courses, or MOOCs, right?
It does. Personalization dramatically improves engagement and completion rates, which makes the MC offerings much more effective and learner-centric. And beyond that, AI can help the institutions themselves by performing predictive analytics on learner data. It allows them to proactively intervene when a student shows signs of struggling, which increases retention and the overall success rate of the entire upskilling effort.
Okay, so we've covered the technology and the collaboration, but none of it works without trust. So how do we ensure quality and long-term societal relevance?
This is the mandate for standards, trust, and inclusion. Long-term success relies entirely on external recognition and trust. Stakeholders have to urgently develop clear, shared standards and rigorous frameworks. These frameworks need to define measurable learning outcomes, assessment rigor, and credit transfer mechanisms.
So without a common quality stamp.
Without a recognized global standard for what an MC is, the entire system risks being devalued and losing all credibility in the eyes of employers.
So accreditation bodies really need to step up and standardize what it means to be an accredited MC provider.
They absolutely do. And furthermore, the analysis encourages aligning MCs with broader societal goals. They should be explicitly linked to initiatives like the UN Sustainable Development Goals, the SDGs.
How would that work?
Well, it ensures MCs aren't just focused on corporate profit, but are contributing to long-term societal well-being. So you'd see more certifications in, for instance, green technology, climate data analysis, or sustainable resource management. It's about aligning education with our biggest global challenges.
And you emphasize that equity is critical. How do we make absolutely sure these digital credentials actively serve as a tool for social inclusion?
It's a real danger. If the MC is only accessible to those who can already afford the technology or already have a high level of digital literacy, it will just exacerbate existing disparities.
Making the gap wider.
Exactly. Digital credentials have to be designed to be accessible to learners from all backgrounds, especially underrepresented or disadvantaged groups. This means subsidized access, robust foundational digital skills training, and flexible delivery models that account for different levels of technological access. The goal has to be to democratize high-value skills, to make the knowledge economy truly accessible to everyone.
Let's shift our focus slightly. We've talked a lot about the student, but let's talk about the teachers. The research clearly showed that MCs must also transform the educators themselves.
This is an often overlooked but absolute vital point for sustainable scaling. Educational authorities should be actively integrating micro-credential pathways for teachers and academic staff. It's essential for faculty to continuously update their own pedagogical skills.
So an MC for how to teach with AI, for example.
Exactly. An MC in using the latest educational technology or adopting AI tools for classroom management or incorporating modern competency-based assessment methods.
And that creates a powerful organizational ripple effect, I'd imagine. The educators who earn these MCs, they become the system's best ambassadors. They normalize the model, and they start incorporating micro-credentialing into their own teaching and institutional practices.
It drives institutional change from within. And beyond that, governments and professional bodies have to embed micro-credentials into established lifelong learning frameworks.
You mean things like professional licensing?
Yes, think mandatory professional licensing updates or the continuing education requirements for doctors, engineers, and accountants. By embedding MCs here, they become a required, cyclical part of professional life. It encourages a permanent culture of continuous reskilling, and it solidifies their role as cornerstones of sustainable learning systems.
And finally, we have to address the global harmonization that's required. The analysis showed that most of the research is concentrated in North America, Europe, and Australia. But the demand for these skills is universal.
The research confirmed this geographical concentration, and the implication is very clear. Without international collaboration, the MC will just remain a geographically limited currency. There's a pressing need for international standards, bodies, and cross-sector partnerships involving universities, powerful industry certification bodies, and government agencies to harmonize all the different MC frameworks.
Because if I earn a data science micro-credential in London, I need to know that it will be understood and valued by an employer in Singapore or São Paulo.
Precisely. And achieving that, it requires developing interoperable platforms for credential exchange, adopting open badge standards that allow the data to be understood universally, and creating clear reciprocal guidelines for accrediting these programs across diverse national systems. The ultimate goal has to be a unified, globally valued system for skill certification that empowers the entire global labor force.
This has been an incredibly detailed deep dive. So to summarize, the research clearly establishes micro-credentials as a truly transformative tool. It sits right at the nexus of education, technology, and the global labor market. They represent a fundamental, and I think necessary, shift toward a modular, skills-focused learning system, and critically, a system that complements rather than replaces traditional degrees. It provides the rapid, verified upskilling that's essential for success in this ultra-fast, AI-driven knowledge economy.
We've seen that the field is maturing very rapidly. It's moving from simple digital badges to these complex systems that require global policy coordination, advanced technology like blockchain, and a renewed commitment to equity and inclusion. But the analysis consistently reminds us that MCs challenge the status quo. And if these powerful, flexible credentials do become the foundational cornerstone of lifelong learning systems globally, we're left with a fundamental and I think provocative question to think about. What crucial role will accreditation and international standardization play in deciding who is allowed to issue these powerful new certifications? And ultimately, in this decentralized digital future, who controls the validation and therefore who controls the future value of knowledge itself? That's something for you to mull or explore on your own.